a collaboration
with Francis Song, a PhD student at Yale, Stéphane Reiter, a postdoc at Yale, and Nicolas Laflorency in Orsay. So to start with, we will use the entanglement entropy to define the entanglement. So we start with the ground state as a pure state. And as usual, we imagine that we separate the system into two pieces in real space, A and B. And what we do is that we look at the Feynman entropy as a function of the reduced density matrix of the subsystem F. Therefore, as usual, we trace out the degrees of freedom of the other subregion B. So we will use this measure of entanglement today for assuming that the ground state is unique of the system. And we will start with one dimensions. So in the continuum limit, we will note X as a size of the subregion A, and M will be the size of the full chain. Now, what is nice about one dimension, as we have seen this morning, for quantum systems, we can establish a very nice formulas, as has been shown in this paper, for the entanglement entropy. So here is the usual formula at zero temperature for periodic boundaries. And as we see, the entanglement entropy goes like the logarithm of the subsystem size, X. And A is a short distance cutoff. And of course, what is interesting is that we can even compute this entanglement entropy at finite temperature. Even we can include a finite size effect. And even we can look at open boundary effects. As we have seen also this morning, the entanglement entropy is somehow a universal quantity in the sense that here we get some scaling function as a function of X, of the subsystem size, but what appears here is a universal number in terms of field theory that does depend on the central charge of the theory, of the low energy theory. Therefore, if we draw this curve as here, so this curve comes from the MRV for spin chains such as Heisenberg spin chain, of course we can vary the length of this chain, but the main idea is that if we would draw here, or if we would plot the same curve, say for the Bose-Hubbard model, between two motor lobes, the theory is an XX model with the same central charge. So we would see the same curves, and all the details about interactions and the macroscopic details have disappeared. Yeah. So what we want to do today is to look at observables that may be behaving in a similar way. So if we there are cases where it has been shown, at least, if we start with a one-dimensional quantum wire or a quantum point contact, that we switch on and off as a function of time for free fermions or for fractional quantum O-ladies, one can show that in a very nice way, as in these papers, that the current fluctuations are Gaussian with a log variance. So here the time T0 and T1 are typically the two times scale in between we switch on and off the quantum point contact. So for this particular problem, it has been shown that one can relate the variance associated with the current fluctuation at the quantum point contact or the charge or the variance of the charge fluctuation scales as a function of time in the same way as the entanglement entropy here. So A and B here mean left and right. So the main idea of this talk is to study in more details this charge fluctuation. So we go back to real space. We have two subregions, A and B. And what we want to look at is the variance associated with the number of particles in the subregion A. Okay? So, and for spin systems, as we will show later, we can replace the number of particle operator in the subregion A by the total SZ operator in this subregion. Okay? So if we look at this Fn number, it has a similar property as the entanglement entropy. First, one can notice that it's symmetric. Second, it's simple to check that if we have a ground state which is a direct product, then this Fn number would be zero. And now we can come back to the cases that I've just mentioned, free fermion and fractional quantum homologies. We know that this one-dimensional series can be mapped on a free boson theory. And using this so-called boson theory, or Luttinger theory, one can compute this F number in a simple way, as a function of the Green function of the scalar field of this theory. And one can show in a quite a simple way that indeed for these two cases, the fluctuation number should vary in a logarithmic way with the subsystem size. So here the K number that appears is called the Luttinger parameter. It is one for free fermions. So it, I mean, we can check this formula if we use the Lorentz invariance, so if we exchange space and time. And for fractional quantum homologies, we have to think that K is a filling factor. And again, exchanging space and time, we recover the formula of the last page. Okay, so this is valid, at least here, for U1 theory, a free boson theory. Now, the outline of this talk is to try to understand in a more general way this fluctuation number or spin number or spin fluctuations. And so what we try to do is to start with simple and then less simple cases. So we will start with one-dimensional conformal field theories, such as for spin systems, and try to prove that the number fluctuations or spin fluctuations scale as entropy. Then we will try to be more general, include the effect of open boundaries and subleading corrections. Then we will go to gapped systems and show that, in principle, we can build a simple argument trying to prove that the fluctuation number follows the entanglement entropy. But of course, as we will also show, there are cases where this fluctuation number does not follow the entanglement entropy. And then at the end of my talk, we will try to go to higher dimension for spin systems in 2D and ladder systems and try to see what we can say. And if I have time, I will try to address a very nice formula, which is the Fish Lehto formula for free fermion, and try to see what we can say about this formula. Okay, so let's start with one-dimensional conformal field theories, which have symmetries larger than U1. So the idea is that because we start with a system with a fixed number of particles or spin, we can always associate a quantity or current. And since we look at number of particles or spin, this current has U1 symmetry. Therefore, it means that this current or charge can always be, or spin can always be written as a massless free boson, even if the theory is more complex. Therefore, if we start with generating function associated with a chart of statistics, then because of this analogy here, at zero temperature, formally one can find Pauli. But of course, parameters that we call G here depends on the model that we look at. But a priori, we can compute the G for any model we like. Now the fluctuation number is obtained in a usual way by taking the second derivative of this function when lambda equals zero. And then it's simple to prove that at a general level, assuming a critical theory, we get a logarithmic behavior. But again, we get a prefactor G here. So let's try to be general and try to guess what would be this factor. So the first thing that we can observe is that this generating function is some conformal invariant. Therefore, if we pass from T equals zero to finite temperature, we obtain the same log, but we replace the subsystem size X by a more complex function here, where beta is 1 over KBT. And now the main idea is to use a quite general argument of statistical physics at high temperature. So the idea is that if we are at very large temperature, we can see B as a thermal bath. And A is in a grand canonical ensemble. Therefore, we open the textbook in quantum mechanics, and we should find that the fluctuation number goes like the compressibility of the system, X here, and normalized to beta. So beta is 1 over KBT. Therefore, if we take this formula and we expand at very large X or a very large temperature, we would identify that this G that appears as a prefactor of the fluctuation number is pi. So here we have restored the speed of particles that should appear here, and kappa, which is the compressibility. So based on this simple argument, we would expect that the main term in one dimension for the fluctuation number for conformal fixed theories would be a log, and the prefactor would vary like the compressibility of the system. And if we would look at spin chains, kappa turns into the uniform magnetic susceptibility. So we observed from this that for this series, it seems that the scaling of this fluctuation number goes like the scaling of the entanglement entropy. But we can also note that this fluctuation number is less universal compared to entropy. Because, of course, this kappa depends on a microscopic detail. If we start with a mod state, we should freeze the charge, and therefore kappa goes to zero, and therefore we have no fluctuation. Now, if we are in a liquid phase, of course things are different. But yes,
boson is free.
So in all the cases that let me. Okay, all the series that I will be looking at are gapless.
And for all these series, the boson associated with this urine current are gapless. So this urine current can be written as a graph phi, where phi is associated with a free boson theory. At least for all the complex SU2 at level K spin chains that we are looking at, all for these gapless systems, this argument seems to be appropriate, where the current indeed emerge from a free boson theory. Okay, so this should also appear here. So it's like the speed of the particle. So maybe I should write down the Hamiltonian, but it's like the speed of particles.
In the third formula,
yes,
and you compare it to the one above, right?
Yes. So here I made an expansion at large x over beta.
So that should just become, the sinh would just give you an exponential, right, for large x.
Yeah, but then you get this log here.
Yeah, so you get two terms,
yes,
then you get rid of the logarithmic term, and you just keep the linear term. Like
yes, so that's correct. Here it is the main dominant term.
Okay.
But of course, for all the cases that we look at, there are other subleading operations. That's correct. Okay? Okay. So the first thing that we would like to do first is to check this form and this ratio here for well-known models, and also looking at the subleading operations and the effect of bundle. So that's the first thing that we want to do.
Okay, so let's start with an XX model. I mean, as we all know, we can map this model of chain onto three fermions. Therefore, we can solve this model. And what we can check is that the population number. So here, I change X into L, into small l, when I refer to a lattice problem. So we see that the population number, the main term here goes like log L with the good factor we expect for free fermions because the pi square is here. And now we get some constant term that we can extract because we have free fermions. And this factor here depends on the Euler number. But at least we can check that if we look at the main term here, the ratio we found is in agreement with the general argument. Now we can do more. So first let's look at the periodic boundary condition case, and we can check this ratio using DMRG. So the square here are the entropy, and the curve are the exact formula. So you see that it is quite nice. And so the cycles are the fluctuations. And in fact, for this particular XX model, we can do much more. We can apply open boundaries. And for open boundaries, what we can check is that the main log term should remain the same, but small l has to be replaced by small two times small l. But still, we get the same log term. And now what is nice with this XX model, again, it can be mapped onto three fermions. So you can compute all the things that we like. And in particular, for open boundary, we find a Friedel contribution, which oscillates with small l. And this is essentially due to the density oscillation due to the open boundary. And we also find a term that goes like in a 1 over small l. So it's nice to make a parallel between the fluctuation number and the entanglement entropy here. We see that they take a similar form, but the fluctuation number has some extra log. So the oscillations are bigger, as we can see here. So let's look at open boundaries. Again, blue curves are the result for entropy, and red curves are the fluctuation. And we see that the fluctuations are more pronounced than the entropy. Okay, so this is good. Now we can do even more. We can, because again, it's free fermions, so we can go to finite temperature. And we can ask how this ratio that we have defined, this quantum ratio, is stable. So let's look at curve as a function of temperature. So we normalize T here with J. So J equal 1. J means the coupling between spin. And what we can observe is that, of course, here we start with a finite chain, so the ratio at low temperature is not one because of the subleading term. But what is very nice is that this ratio is flat for a very large temperature. And suddenly, when T equals 0.2 J, we observe that this ratio goes down. But what is interesting, at very large temperature, we can do high temperature expansion. And what we can prove in a simple way is that all the spins of the subregion play a role, both in entropy and in filtration. So here we said that the size of the subregion A, X or L, is half of the chain. And if spin gives you a log 2 for entropy, we see that the entropy now goes like L log 2 normalized to 2. And now what is interesting is that if we look at the ratio between F and S at very large temperature, so here we start with the XX model at very large temperature, the ratio should be identical as the random singlet phase as we have seen this morning, as studied by Rafael and Moore. And if we would plot now the ratio of F versus S for the disordered XX model, we would find the same ratio as a pure XX model at very large temperature. So it's quite interesting. Both the temperature and looking at bonds which are disordered seems to give the same ratio. Okay. So now we want to do more. Of course, we want to include interaction. So why not to look at the XXZ model and include this term here. So we know, so here we will use a slightly different version of the fluctuation number by looking at the spin-spin correlation function in the subregion A. So here the sum over I and J runs onto the subregion A. So for the XXZ model, of course, we can access this correlation functions, and again, this involves the Luttinger parameter K. And looking at this fluctuation number, what we check is that the main term is a ghetto log. And the prefactor is the Luttinger parameter. And again, what we found, but what is interesting to note is that this log term here comes from the short-range fluctuations, meaning that it comes from the uniform part of the spin-spin correlation functions and not the staggered part. And now the staggered part gives us some oscillatory term. And more we approach the Heisenberg point, K becomes smaller and smaller and approaches half. And we see that then this term becomes more important. And in particular, if we are right at the Heisenberg point, we should expect some square root of log of R. So this term should become more and more important. So again, we have checked all these results using the MRG. So this is quite interesting. And we can, based on this formula for each value of k, of course, we can plot this fluctuation number and extract a k. Now, if we look at which k we obtain from this fit and we compare with beta on that, it seems to be quite nice. Okay, so up to now we have looked at XXZ model or XX model, but now we can ask how interaction details affect this log, or affect the full formula. So we can look, say, at the at a well-known spin-chain where we can compute things. So we can look at the Arden-Shastri model. So the spin-spin interaction goes like 1 over r squared. We can access to the spin-spin correlation function. So then we can access to the fluctuation number. And what we obtain is that this formula is the same formula as if we would have used the XXZ model and plug k equal half as it should be for SU2 invariants. And this A2 number then goes to a certain value. So it seems that the details, at least the detail of interactions, don't seem to matter too much. Yeah. The log remains a log. And even the terms after seem to be the same. Okay, and again, we have to check this formula using JMRG. But we can look at more complex spin chain, as I mentioned at the beginning. So we can look at spin chain which can be mapped onto SU2 Vesumino Witten model with a level of the theory K. And to access the preparator of the fluctuation number, we only need to know the product of speed of particle or in the spin chain, the coupling between spins and the magnetic susceptibilities. And what we found is that for these particular spin chains, the prefactor would depend, of course, on the size of the spin S and on the level K or on the level K of the theory. And so this log, this leading log for the fluctuation number seems to be quite universal for these spin chains and this one-dimensional CFT. Okay, so now let's try to address other systems. So I think one system where physics can play some important role is some gap systems. So let's start with a simple ground state where we have a dimer first, a phase. So we would expect that the entropy and the fluctuation number fluctuates or oscillates if we set the separation region is a hierarchy. If the separation region line between A and B is here, we cut no link, and therefore the entropy has to be zero, and as well the fluctuation number should be zero. And that's what we see in this curve. So the zero is here. And so in a gap phase, I think it's fair to, at least for the gap phase that we have looked at, but I think it's quite general, the ratio should be constant because the physics somehow just depend on the number of links that we break, either one or zero. But it can be more general. But then we may ask how this relation between entanglement entropy and this observable the fluctuations associated with the number of particles in the subregion A is more general. And I think it's not obvious because if we write the entropy as a function of the eigenvalues of the reduced density matrix, as usual, we get a set of eigenvalues. Now, if we compute the fluctuation number, we have to be more tricky. And we have to reorganize these eigenvalues for a given SZ. And SZ is the total SZ component for the subregion A. So, of course, for all the spin chain here that we look at, we would expect that the most weight or the most important weight come from SZ equals zero. But still, it's not yet clear to reorganize those eigenvalues. And also, if we look at a general level, at the fluctuation number, it takes a quite a complex form. So we have not yet managed to prove that, you know, there is a general relation between this f and s. And also, it's simple to prove that there are cases where this would not work. So one simple case is the ideal Bose-Gas. Of course, in one dimension, and this ideal Bose-Gas is not stable as soon as we switch on interaction, but still we can look at this case. And what we found, I mean this is a known result, so if we cut the chain with two of these Bose-Gas, the reduced density matrix takes this binomial form. And P is a probability to be in the subsystem N. And N, small n here means the number of charge on in the subregion A. And big N is the total number of particles. And so for this binomial statistics, of course, we can access this variance associated to the number of particles. And one finds this usual formula. Now, assuming that this total number of particles is large, we can replace the binomial distribution by a Gaussian distribution and check that the entanglement entropy now goes in a strange way as a function of this variance. It goes like a log of the square root of this variance. So at least it's one case where we could not claim that S and F are linked in a linear way. And also, I think what is important for what I've said before is that it's very important that the total number of particles, or AZ, is conserved. Because if we would look at a case where it's not where it does not happen, it's a quantum Ising chain. And there we can check in a simple way that, again, S and F don't follow the same route at all. So I think this link between S and F certainly occur in CFTs and spin chains and fermion problems, at least in one dimension and gap systems. But there are cases where it's certainly not the case. Okay, so so far we have looked at these one-dimensional systems. Now let's try to look at what is known about higher dimensions. In higher dimensions, especially two dimensions, for free fermions, there is a nice work mentioned here that relates indeed the scaling of the fluctuations with the entanglement entropy. So at least for free fermions, it seems that we can build such a law, even in higher dimension, linking the fluctuation number with the entanglement entropy. And then there are other well-known results, which is that the entanglement, as we have seen this morning, the entanglement entropy, the main dominant term for gap model, should be like F. Now let's try to look at what we can learn from our side on the fluctuations. So the first problem that we try to look at is a problem of coupled ladders. So essentially, here is a ladder, here is another ladder, and we couple the ladder through some interaction that we call a lambda. And the interaction here inside the ladders are one. Okay? So we know well that for this model of coupled ladders, we should expect two kind of different phases, so-called. We have two valence bond phases where we can form bond inside each ladder or between the ladder. And of course, in between, we should expect an L phase. And especially close to lambda equal 1. Now let's try to look at what we obtain. So this is a nice result from Nicolas Laperonci using quantum Monte Carlo on this fluctuation number. So here are two curves. The green curve is a green curve that we should expect in a valence bond phase. And what we check, it is in agreement with what we said before. If we have a gap phase, the fluctuation number or the entanglement entropy should follow the number of links or singlets that we break. So here, the number of singlets that we break should be proportional to the size of the chain. So here we fix the subsystem region to be half of n here. So as we can see, the fluctuation number here goes like n for the gap phase. So it seems to be in agreement with the main term of the entanglement entropy. But now, if we look at the nail phase, it seems that the most important term comes from n log l. So it seems that the nail phase has a remnant of this fermion systems. And if we compute the entanglement entropy using, let's say, a simple spin wave theory, one would find that this entropy goes like L, at least the main term. So it seems that for the nail phase, the fluctuation number and the entanglement entropy don't follow the same scale. At least that's what we observe here. And I will also mention this slide. So here we try to look via various methods, the DMRG, the quantum Monte Carlo, and analytical results at ladder systems. So here we look at a ladder, and n is the number of checks in this ladder. And we try slightly different geometries. And we try to look at the fluctuation, so in blue, so the slight blue are the quantum Monte Carlo results, and the less light blue are the DMRG results. And we see that they are quite in good agreement. But first, let's look at the entanglement entropy, so this red curve. So this is the usual entanglement entropy that we access through the MRG, and we found essentially the same curves as the one found by Roger Melko, Matthew Hastings, and collaborators. But so it seems that if we would like to draw a line here, it seems that the entanglement entropy indeed goes like the number of chains, or at least it seems to be more flat. But now, if we look at the fluctuation number, it's certainly a different story. So, of course, we need to have more points and draw a better line, but that's where we are right now. And moreover, if we look at the Rényi entropies, as we have defined this morning, and in particular, the Rényi entropy with alpha equal 2 seems to follow the fluctuation number. So we need to have more points to stress that it goes like L log L and to make a nice link with a couple ladder systems. But at least that's where we are. Okay, so just to summarize this part, what we try to do so far is to start from one dimension and prove that if we start from one dimension of quantum field theories or GATT phases, we can make a link between the scaling of entanglement entropy with the scaling of nucleation. Of course, the entropy is more universal, but the fluctuation can be measured. Although the interesting aspect is that the fluctuation can be accessed from quantum Monte Carlo. Okay, so for the time that remains now, what I would like to do is to go back to free fermions and go back to this nice Kulisch-Levitov formula. So let's try to look more carefully at this formula. It's a nice formula that relates the entanglement entropy with the full set of cumulants of the charge statistics. And if we would look at the 1D wire or 1D free boson theory, or all our Gaussian model. So only the variance C2 matter. But let's try to look more at this formula. The way we built it is first we can write a general link between S and the generating function, chi. And now what we do is that we plug the link as usual here between chi and all the series of chi. And we found this formula. So of course we can check that, as I mentioned, if we take the wire problem, we get Gaussian situations. We look at the Bernoulli number V2, and we indeed find the good ratio between the two. But then there is something more subtle. Because let's imagine we would look at the problem with only one fermion, which is delocalized between A and B. So it's like a spin half problem. So up, it's like one particle in A, and down would be zero particle in A. So the entropy must be log 2, so it's finite. But now if we look at this right side, so this is finite, but now we look at this right side. And we know quite well what is the generating function for a spin half state. It's like this cos lambda divided by 2. So from this, we can extract the all the cumulants. And what we observe is that if we look at a cumulant with large values of n, something like this should diverge. But not. So something is wrong, because if you look at the Bernoulli numbers for large n, this is a finite factor. So if we look at this formula, the left side is finite, it's log 2, but the right side is divergent. So something seems to be not correct. And I think the thing which is maybe not appropriate is the passage between here and here. Here we integrate lambda or u from minus infinity to plus infinity. But if we look at this function here, it has a pole when, let's say, lambda equal pi. So I think we have to be very careful when writing this passage from here to here. We have to be sure that the series has a radius of convergence which is large and not pi. At least this is one case where this formula would not hold. So what we try to do here is to find a way to rewrite this S as a convergence sum. So the way that we did it is that first we wrote in an exact way S as a function of the factorial of cumulants. And those F are associated with the cumulants of this generating function here, which is not the usual one. Then there is a way we can relate F to C's, and now we found the formula, which seems to be okay for any number of particles. So I thank you for your attention, and I will stop here.
for questions.
Just with regards to your particle number or spin fluctuation in the Heisenberg antiferromagnet, you saw this L log L scaling?
Yes. So,
so that's the same scaling as this spin as the contribution to the susceptibility from the edge, right?
Which A, so you mean here, okay.
If you have a system with a with an edge, then there is a contribution to magnetic susceptibility that diverges.
Sure.
So is that the same? Can you think of that as the same?
Maybe. So that's a, maybe that's a good idea. So what we try to do so far, I mean, is to look at the spin wave, the theory. But I must admit that this spin wave theory does not conserve as Z. So at the moment, we cannot conclude neither on L or L log L. But maybe that's what we need to do right now, is we need to look more carefully at the properties of this edge.
Questions? That's good for a question. So is there, in your vision, any circumstances by which, under which you can prove that energy and fluctuations are related, or one is bound with the other?
At least for cases as three terms, I think you can certainly prove that. Yes, but beyond that, so far, so what we do is just to, you know, case by case, and so that's where we are.
Let's think about it again.